to do with that citywide, you know, within the city of New York. And then you had the upstate New York, which was a different, New York City was kind of like a state within itself. So it had its own organization, its own citywide organization. It didn't have nothing to do with the people, as we call it, upstate New York. We're talking about Troy and...
Rochester, Buffalo,
that was the upstate. Mm-hmm. New York City was separate. There was the group in Michigan. They concentrated on organizing around whatever the issues were that affected the welfare programs itself, and they were instrumental in doing a Michigan state organization. So it concentrated on that. That's the way it was done. These groups then grouped together and come on a national scene. By that time, we had something called Family Assistance Plan that had been proposed by Nixon, I guess. And so we had our staff people concentrated a lot on research, find out what that plan was all about, disseminated the information and granted it, sent it out to all of the groups across the country because it would affect everybody. So that's mainly what staff people done. It's been a long time, but as I remember coming up to the convention, I was still, I guess you call it, acting chairwoman for the group. And when we got to Trinity College,
that
weekend, I remember I had to set up all of the committees. We had to have a credentials committee, we had to have a nominating committee, there was another one, I don't remember what it was, but it was quite interesting. I remember using 11 women from 11 different states for nominating committee. And one of the persons was a woman out of Philadelphia named Hazel Leslie. Hazel is the first one to organize welfare recipient group in Philadelphia. Not Roxanne Jones. Not Roxanne Jones. Roxanne Jones came after Hazel was sick. But Hazel Leslie was the first one. So Hazel came to the meeting. I remember appointing Hazel chairwoman for that nominating committee. And I remember people getting very uptight with me because they wanted to sit on the nominating committee. And a lot of them had their own hidden agendas. I understood that. Not that I was that bright. I remember these men came out of New York. It was some men. One of them's name was Al something, and the other one, his last name was Higgins. I can remember that he was a heavy guy. The New York people knew him because, you know, they come in and bust loads. And Ed Trinity.
Yeah.
Still having problems. So, you know, people get cut off.
And they still turn to you. They still turn to you.
Yeah. Where was I?
About the agendas.
I won't know when you catch that. Okay, thank you. We everybody, I remember at Trinity College, they have the, in the main auditorium, I guess, where you have Miss Hall, where you it's kind of like down a slope, and then you have to walk up some steps, not a lot of steps, but you're going up the whole time to your dormitory and whatever. So after we'd had the opening session, and
You chaired the opening session as the acting chair still?
A part of it. Then I left because we had some speakers and people, Big Greg, who was there. I went outside to do the... So I sat on these steps. And we had a lady from San Bernardino, California, was there, named Esther Washington. So, the committees, and I sit there. So, different people came up, signed up for different committees, but everybody wanted to be on nominating committee. I'm only going to have 11 people. Those 11 people will represent 11 states. That's all we're going to have. You got a name from your state. You know, you give it to me, then I will do what I have to do. There was credentials. You can stare into and who's going to vote for whatever have you. You can sit here. There was another one. I can't remember where it was. Anyway. They was upset with me because they couldn't get on the nominating committee. So I remember sitting back, and after I had made all the assignments, I was sitting back on my feet like this, and these people were standing around me. So Esther was inside. Esther looked out the window and saw all these people. She can see my doing this. So she jumps up and she run out to see what's going on. By that time, George, he looked out the window and he saw the same thing. So he came out to see what was going on. When they got there, I was laughing. So Esther just kept walking like she didn't suspect nothing. When George got there, he kept walking. And he went on back into the room. So I remember this man, his name Al. I don't know where Al was. He looked a little bit Puerto Rican or something to me, but he didn't speak like that. But he was involved in poverty programs. So he said, well, Mrs. Tillman, if you tell me that you won't be elected chairwoman at this convention, I will tell you you're lying. I said, but I'm not running. And I wasn't. And laughed it off. And he went on by his business. Everybody had lunch, and we went. They had given a lot of coats. They still had coats in those bottles. So it was a rack of Coca-Cola bottles in the back. So somebody said, and see, I never think about any kind of violence. So somebody said, somebody need to watch them coats bottles because somebody might, So I look back. And it was a bunch of empty, people had drank coke because they give them to us. So I went back to take a look. So I stood back there where the coke bottles was. And they was voting, yeah, and blah, 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 blah. I didn't, because Hazel was chairing the election by now, So I'm here watching to make sure that don't nobody mess with the coke bottles and, get nervous enough. So I didn't even hear my name called. And most people don't believe this, but it's the truth. I did not hear my name called because I didn't even know I had been nominated.
And did that come from the committee or from the floor?
Come from the committee. The committee, she presented her slate. And see, once you have the, you present your slate, if you have anybody from the floor, you can nominate them. Usually, they follow the slate, unless you really got some rabble rousing kind of thing. So, somebody walked up to me and hit me on the shoulder and said, "Are you Miss Tillman?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, she wants you up, they want you up front." I said, "Oh, okay, well, wait a minute." You know, I wasn't in no hurry. Go, wait. I want to deal with these bottles here because I don't want nobody throwing no bottles. So they said, "Well, come on, Miss Tillman, they want you up front." I went up front. They had me to gamble. The election was over. And I was not into any of it. I didn't know even who. I didn't even never saw the nominating slate. I didn't go over it when she got it. I just turned it over all to her. And then I was through with it. And that's where I've been in other committees. I turned it all over to those people, one person. And people who wanted to be on the committee to sign up over here. And that was it. I was just about through with it. But that was really amazing. I did not. As I said, my head wasn't in the ring at all by me.
Well, there was a reference in something I read to a Jeanette Washington challenging your being chair.
No, Jeanette didn't challenge. Jeanette challenged anything. I don't remember Jeanette ever challenging me at all.
Well, and no one nominated anybody else from the floor.
They may have. I'm trying to tell you now.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened because my mind was not into that. I wasn't running. I hadn't told nobody I was going to run. So now, Jeanette may have challenged it, but
the floor,
they took care of that. They failed. Not me. I wasn't in it at all.
Yeah.
You know, when I know anything, they were finished with the election and gave me the gavel. In matter of fact, it was a group of Puerto Rican people from New Jersey brought the gavel with them, and they were the ones who presented the gavel to the chairwoman. And that was me. And I lost that gavel in my move, and I sure hated that. They gave it to me.
Well, why hadn't you decided to actively run?
Because that wasn't in my thing. I didn't want to run nothing. I became, when they drafted me as temporary chairman, they needed somebody, and I served the best I could. But I've never been into what you call, I never want to do that. I just assume do whatever I need to do out of the back room and let somebody else take the front lead.
Now, what role did you play between the February meeting and the August meeting?
Well, I think we had some conferences. I probably made two or three trips to Washington, but mostly do my thing here in Los Angeles and still doing cases like I'm doing now and et cetera, and trying to keep the group afloat here and have fundraisers because I never asked anybody for any funds for ANC Mothers. Always we go and cook up some chillings and chicken and stuff ourselves and pay our phone bill and light bills and stuff like that. And the women all were getting a welfare check anyway, so nobody was trying to make no salary out of matter of fact, we never had paid salaries in the organization until 1977. It was all strictly volunteer.
Now, when you went back and forth on these, you know, for conferences and things, what did you do about child care?
Well, in the book, I probably will take my hat off to my kids, number one, my oldest daughter, my oldest son, who kept his brothers and sisters intact. As my neighbors say, they never knew I was gone until they see me coming back, because usually we always took night flights in those days. They were cheaper.
Right.
And I think Marsha the first time I went away from home, she was about 15 years old. But I wasn't on no mission from the organization. We just decided to go to Oakland, and I took my little baby daughter with me. But she ran the house. When I got involved, moving around, she still run the house, took care of. And my oldest son, who is 2 years younger than she is, have always been the bossy kind. So he bossed everybody anyway.
And the baby was up with your sister?
The baby was home by then. The baby was up with my sister until I had to go on welfare, then I brought her home. But they kept them all. They stayed in the house. So Ms. Johnson said the neighbors said, "Hey, we never knew you was gone." Because usually if there's nobody there, a lot of kids hanging around the house, a lot of boys hanging around the house, Ron did not allow that. You know, he wouldn't allow it today if he could boss my house. he did not allow that. And so they stayed in the house. Mm-hmm. If it was school time, she sent them on to school, because school was right up the street. No, I didn't have any kind of problem. Now, when she left the home, when she got married and moved away, I always had a sister-in-law and a friend to keep the younger girls, the two younger girls.
Mm-hmm.
The boys decided they didn't need nobody.
Mm.
The babysit them, so they said the babysit themselves. And I have never, I was telling my husband the other day, I have never had to rush home because of an emergency for once. The kid, the one that just left out of here, they hospitalized her because they thought she had spinal meningitis. Mm-hmm. And I was in Chicago. They had a conference there, and the Washington office, they called Washington, Washington called Chicago. I called the plane and come home. That's the only time I've ever had to come home for an emergency.
So between the February meeting and the August meeting, you weren't involved going back and helping to...
back there, but usually it talked to George a lot on the phone. And then George came out here several times. He would come out here several times because he was a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And he was be up and down the state, and he always come to the house and stay at the house. Yeah.
Now, Johnny, one of the things that I was interested in is your own focus here in ANC Mothers was a lot getting people respect and what they were due on welfare. But you had a lot of focus on issues like training for people who wanted to work, being educated, child care.
At the local level.
At the local. How did you try and carry
I would discuss it with the other groups,
mm-hmm.
and they may be able to do some of the things that we had done out here. Not as a national campaign or nothing, or nothing like that. And a lot of the women were already in training. They had training programs, and a lot of the women that I was in contact with also came out of the poverty programs. Except people here in California, we didn't. A lot of us didn't come out of that. Mm-hmm. We were already doing something before the poverty program came into being, and that's why you had some organizers in the other places because of the different program that had poor people involved.
Mm-hmm.
So then they had saw a need to had organizers because the people were already on staff in different programs anyway. Here we didn't have that.
Well, I have a sense. Did you ever, for instance, get into discussion with George on some of your ideas around pushing the training and pushing for child care, making that key agendas in the national welfare rights?
I don't think I made it an issue. For the national people to deal with nationally, which maybe we should have. But But when they start talking about putting welfare recipients to work, you remember the Forest Work Program?
Right.
That's when we talk about child care then and transportation, you know, and all upkeep of the people who's going to be in training and that kind of stuff. That's when we really got involved into it then, because then they really didn't have no kind of adequate child care anyway, and it really wasn't in the piece of legislation, not a strong piece as far as child care was concerned. And that was a main problem, especially in the AFDC, because if you didn't have children, you couldn't be on the AFDC in the first place, you know. So they never had no strong piece in the FAP program. As far as child care was concerned, I think you talked a little about a third and a this and, you know, some money for this and then, but they would say child care, you know, but it wasn't enough.
Right.
Because child care can get very expensive, you know.
Now, was this ever, did you ever have disagreements with George over the national program? I mean, did you and the other recipients and the elected leadership see things differently, do you think, than the staff?
In a lot of instances, yeah. A lot of people came in. The journey come ladies, a lot of them. And questioned George, you know, what his function was, why was it, you know, this kind of thing. I didn't have no problem with George. Okay, somebody needed to do it. Nobody else hadn't done it. The people who were questioning George and that kind of stuff didn't have the ability to pull money together like he did. It's enough to say, well, he's not a welfare recipient. But you got to understand, the people that were giving money weren't giving it to welfare recipients either. Okay? So George was there. That's who they really want to get the money to. They ain't giving none about us, you know. And George was one of those kind of folk that wouldn't take no for an answer. Or he'd tell them, well, you got some money. If you don't know how to get it. If you don't have it, you know how to get it. You know somebody that do have some. We need money for so and so. He'd do that.
Yeah. So the conflict, to the extent there was any, was between some people who felt that recipients should run the organization at all levels versus the idea of a paid staff that were not recipients.
Right. Some in a lot of cases. Not all of us, but and I certainly didn't. It didn't matter to me. And like I said, George only made $15,000 a year. That was not a lot of money.
Right. Yeah. Now,